Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Benjamin R. Harrison, one half of your hosting team.
I'm the other third, Adam Pranica.
How do we make up the deficit?
Volume.
Having people mail us stuff. Yeah, volume too. Adam, we've been deluged with packages, frankly.
We don't want to turn this into one of those John Roderick opens his mail for 2 hours style podcasts. So we gotta open packages and letters from time to time, right?
I can't imagine anything as embarrassing as doing any John Roderick style podcast, Adam.
Yeah, the worst.
The worst.
Let's get to it.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
So I have one here from listener Tom R. This was sent to my real home address, which my wife caught me giving this out. She was like looking over my shoulder as I was sending an email.
Oh, no.
Like, what are you doing?
She's smart.
Fortunately, Tom chose not to murder us. So thanks, Tom.
Got away with one more, Ben.
What do you got there? You got some packages of your own, I believe.
Yeah, we got a couple of boxes from Anne from Austin, Texas, Ben.
Ooh, where's Tom from? Let me look at this shipping label. Tom hails from Wheaton, Illinois. Wow. I wonder if there's anybody named Will living in Wheaton. Now, this is a sizable box here.
Whoa. Whoa, Anne sent sort of a fun gift basket style box.
Cool.
There's sort of a mini movie poster of a film that I think we might call Schismed. Oh, the box is called Bummer Box.
Oh,
right, that's a great callback. First item in the Bummer Box is the Schismed movie poster with Kevin Uxbridge. Looks awesome. We have a coconut cup, perfect for making cocoa no-nos.
Nice.
Inside, we have a couple of packs of Star Trek cards. We have Cinnamon Fire Jolly Ranchers candy.
Yum.
We have a box of linguine. Wow, that's a deep callback right there. And a nice card. I will open that up and read you the letter. Hey, Adam, big fan of the pod. I was watching TNG when I discovered your pod, and it brings a lot of joy to my life. Hope to meet you at Greatest Gen Con 2017. Oh, and there's a recipe for Coco No-No in it.
Cool.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Anne.
All right, here is the letter from Tom. It says, Dear Ben and Adam, I can't imagine who thought a STTNG party game was a good idea. Enjoy. Hope to catch up with you guys in Chicago in August. We don't call it the Risa of the Midwest for nothing. Regards, Tom. P.S. If you ever run this thing, I call Jordy. I really want to spend some time in that guy's head. Wow. So the box we have here is How to Host a Mystery, Star Trek The Next Generation Edition. And it's like, I think it's one of those have a murdery mystery dinner party at your home type of deals.
Oh, geez. Does that box come with friends?
Unfortunately, I don't see any here in the package. Oh. So it looks like, kind of looks like a Passover Seder kit. Like there's a there's like a bunch of booklets for you to follow along. There's a host's guide. Sort of halfway between like a Dungeon Master kit and a Passover Seder kit, I'm going to say.
Fun.
There's a book full of secret clues. There is a cassette tape that presumably has some fun audio on it.
That sort of dates the game a little bit.
Yeah. There's a... this is good. There's a map of the ship. Not too different from the ship schematics that somebody sent in.
Wow.
Man.
Sounds pretty deluxe.
Yeah, this looks really fun, actually. I kind of want to get, like, my dust off my ghetto blaster and play this.
Wow, really cool. Really is fun when people send stuff in to us like this. I think we've been really fortunate.
Yeah, I love the, because this is, like, there's the famous board game where there's a VHS tape of Gowron.
Yeah.
But this is, like, definitely, like, two clicks more obscure than that.
Yeah, I like the deep cuts.
Yeah.
That's why I like the Bummer Box so much. It's super fun to get, like, some abstract letters and mail like this. This is great.
Very cool. Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you, Anne.
Thanks, guys.
What do you say we get on with the show, Adam?
We have so much to get to. Twice as much as we deserve, Ben. Season 6, Episode 24, Second Chances. Ben, this is the first episode directed by the great LeVar Burton.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note a few of his aesthetic choices right away. Like, let me be clear, this is his first time directing anything. He's not that guy who's laying back in the cut, just like not really having an opinion about composition or camera movement. Like, it seems like he's doing some stuff here, and that was neat to see.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, like, has taken a couple of pages from the Frakes playbook, but is also making his own statements. It's not a Frakes. It's not a takeoff of a Frakes. It's, like, it's his own thing.
Yeah.
It's really good.
He blocks people hero shot style a lot, which is cool. Like, a lot of times you'll see the camera squared up to an actor at, like, eye height. Mm-hmm. And many times throughout this episode, he is shooting up a little bit, making these characters seem a little larger than life. Oh, that was neat. And he's also doing a lot of moving, establishing shots, which is a fairly intentional thing, an intentional creative decision by him. So,
and not the easiest thing to, like, that's definitely a place where a first-time director can get caught in the weeds. It's a place that a grizzled veteran of directing can get caught in the weeds.
Yeah.
Like, covering a shot with a moving camera is much, much more challenging than setting up a wide establishing and a couple of punch-ins.
I dig his strategy of, I mean, I don't know whether this was his choice or not, but waiting until season 6 to get in the big chair, because he's seen a lot of good Trek, a lot of bad Trek. I'm sure a lot of good directors and bad directors. Like, he's got...
And all through those little pins in his visor.
Yeah. Yeah. So he has a wealth of experience to draw from.
Yeah. He was probably like, hey, let me do an episode where I don't have a fucking raging headache the whole time from this metal thing you've clamped to my head.
That'd be helpful.
He starts the episode with a shot of Lieutenant Jay coming in to check out Riker's jazz combo, doing a little set on 10 Forward.
Yeah, I would have really liked on a music stand, like, the name of his band. Or like, on the bass drum, like in cursive letters, something like W. Riker and the Bones or something. Like, what's his band name? I gotta know.
Splatter Pattern?
Dreamy and Disheveled. He's got a nice open V going. He's super cash.
He's got a loafy keyboard player.
He's got to have full range of motion in his arms because he's playing that bone big time.
Yeah. Star Trek, maybe less than any other series, falls into the trap of we're putting kind of like our own style on people in the future because we think this looks cool now, so it will look cool then.
Yeah.
But this costume they have him in is definitely that. It's like it is the early mid-90s, like, big old dad dress shirt untucked with very roomy slacks and nondescript square-toed black shoes.
That is such a specific reference, those fucking square toes. I'm glad he didn't go, like, full male figure skater with the top and get all sequins-y about it. Like, he sort of went, like black shirt... tucked in Asian fusion restaurant server vibe. Like he kept it, he downplayed it quite a bit, and I admired that. You know, when you're Will Riker, you want the music to be the star, right?
You do, and it is. He takes a request from the audience.
At a request tonight.
Beverly and Troy are in their civvies, taken in the show, and Troy puts in a request.
Nightbird.
And he resists at first, Adam.
Any requests?
Nightbird.
And when he finally consents to playing this song, Beverly is like, what did you just ask him to do, Troy? And she's like, well, not only is that a sex move, but it's also a song he's been trying to teach himself for a long time. And he just has never really nailed it.
Yeah. He's real nervous about it. He Riker-izes Troy. He Riker-izes the rest of the members in his combo.
Yeah.
Like,
can you believe this?
It's a little bit whiplashy. Like they're about to play Caravan or something.
Not quite my tempo. It's all good. No worries. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nightbird.
And he's just putting the trombone to his lips when...
Here it comes.
Commander Data...
Data to Commander Riker.
...radios him up and says...
Go ahead. Commander, you are needed on the bridge.
If you could set that bone down and get your ass up here, that would be great.
Saved by the communicator.
Yeah.
I was so hoping in the interim that Riker wouldn't change before going to the bridge, and sure as shit, he's up there super cash. Cash and swishy. Yeah.
Did you see Lieutenant Paul Manafort walking around on the bridge, too?
No.
Yeah, one of the background extras is a total Paul Manafort. He's like at, you know, the engineering station when Riker and Data are at the science station. Anyways, they're at this planet that has like some kind of disruption field in its atmosphere. I guess it used to have a Federation research base, but the disruption field like fucked that up for them. And so this field causes a problem where they can't transport into or out of the planet unless there are certain very like rare conditions. And they've shown up for this because the disruption field has been in place for 8 years and they've arrived just in time for three windows to open. And Riker has some history with this planet, does he not, Adam?
He sure does. He narrowly escaped with his life on a mission there 8 years prior.
Yeah.
The science of this planet is pretty neat. Like, it's got an 8-year orbit around its sun, and when the planet is at its closest, that's when the disruption field weakens enough for transporting to occur. So there's not anything that they can do about the timing of it. They're just sort of subject to its position in space.
Yeah, and it's got some like important MacGuffin data in one of the computers. That's why they've come back, right?
That is where this episode fails. It's like file management mission. Like, we left this stack of disks down there and we got to go get them. But, like, what could be so important 8 years ago that they need to go retrieve this stuff? Like,
yeah,
that part, a strong case has not been made for the importance of this materiel that they're there to retrieve.
It's a weak MacGuffin. If they had just shown somebody opening a box full of this data and had it glow on their face, like in Pulp Fiction, it would have carried so much more weight.
Limp MacGuffin was their second choice for that band name.
you really do not want a Limp MacGuffin. You want to be able to, you know, if you're doing an app, if you're doing app, Adam, and your MacGuffin goes limp, like, that could be a real problem for your app.
You want a turgid MacGuffin. A throbbing turgid MacGuffin.
I knew we'd get to that ding.
We had it cornered.
Yeah. It took us a little while to grab a hold of your throbbing MacGuffin, Adam. But now that we've got it, we're not letting it go.
They're like, this window's open. Might as well send an away team down to recover these items. And this set looks like a recycled Janolan set. It's got that corner shower transporter. And Data, Riker, and Worf beam down armed. And they're checking things out. And they're like, they sort of notice that the station has been kept up. Like, it's not dusty. It's a little bit tidy. The computer stations are on.
There's some, like, plywood over a couple of the windows. And Riker's like, I left this place an absolute mess. Like, if any of you have seen my other quarters, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. What do you think we brought these phasers for?
We were down here for a while. I did some damage. And so Data's on his tricorder, and he's like, well, not for nothing, guys, but there's somebody coming toward us. Somebody humanoid.
Look, I'm telling you, there's something moving and it ain't us.
They all skin their phasers, and Worf, like, goes, he's like, Worf's getting real tactical, like huddling up against a bulkhead.
Yeah.
And
Data's just out in the open, as he is.
Yeah. Riker's behind some stacked up equipment. Door opens. In through the door, in a classic Riker gait, but still shrouded in shadow, comes a figure. He steps into the light, and it is Fuller Beard, William Riker, and it is Double Riker Eyes to theme music.
We got ourselves a feral Riker, Ben. I don't know about you, but if someone has come home and I'm not expecting it, it is just a miracle that I'm not in some state of undress. Riker fairly fully clothed here. Riker Beta.
Yeah, he's not just fully clothed. Like, he has shirt plus jacket. Like, that's a level of clothes that really isn't necessary when you've been living alone for 8 years, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking because he's living in caves that it's got to be cold, though, right?
Oh, it's like a chilly place?
Yeah.
All right, I'll buy that headcanon.
That's my headcanon.
That's a pretty turgid headcanon.
Double Riker squints to commercial, that was fun.
Yeah. Is it pronounced turgid or turgid?
I've always used a hard G.
Really?
Intentionally. For a hard word.
I like it. I'm not saying I don't like it, Adam. I guess I just read it a lot and assumed turgid. But
it's like GIF versus GIF.
Yeah. Oh, maybe it's the GIF versus GIF of boners.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
So we come back and we've got this special effect where Yellow Riker is standing there and Red Riker walks a full circle around him, and they do the.
Who are you? Who are you?
Who are you? Who are you?
Who are you?
Who is this kid? What's he gonna do?
This is one of those things, Ben, that's like, for a first-time director, keeping eyeline continuity straight, like, there are a number of technical challenges here to contend with. And, like, for the effect being as old as it is, it's almost clump-level doubling, you know? Like, it mm-hmm. looks pretty good. The light works.
Yeah.
The eyeline works. It's not bad. It's better than what I thought it would be in the early 90s.
Right. Yeah, so red shirt Riker farts, and yellow shirt Riker says, "In some cultures, it's considered a compliment." And then red shirt Riker goes, "Ma Baines, please."
I'm going to let you just run this out.
So yeah, they're like a little bit baffled by this situation, and
much like they don't believe Kalis is Kalis, they sort of guess clone right away. They're like, there's no way this is the guy.
Yeah, there are a lot of parallels between the last episode and this one.
Yeah.
But Yellow Shirt Riker is basically saying, like, yeah, I'm sure if you check with the Starfleet computer banks, they'll show a record of me being lost in action 8 years ago. So I've been stranded here. Thank you for coming and rescuing me. I don't know who this guy is, but I'm Will Riker.
Yeah, they're hurling accusations at each other that the other one's a Fugazi. So, like, I guess step one is taking him up to the entrepreneur. They fit him for a backslip zip in a condo and get him cleaned up and bring him to Six Bay and study him a little bit. And sure as shit, the scans indicate that he is the real deal. He is no clone, because you can't clone brain matter, I guess. He's the guy.
Right. Yeah, he has, like, a brain fingerprint, and the doctor is like, no, yeah, like, you can't fake this. He's the real deal.
We've never had this much sexual prowess on board at once before.
Lieutenant Jay is just, like, casually locking her door.
Yeah, really need... Roll out the deadbolts we haven't installed yet. Feral Riker on the loose.
This is the... this is the kick in the pants we've needed for all six seasons.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurse the disease.
Riker Prime plays this fairly interestingly, I thought. And in that, and by that I mean, like, a little neutral to hostile neutral. Like, he does not have a great amount of empathy for himself in a weird way, you know? Like, he finds, like, Riker Beta as a little bit of a challenge. Like, I don't know quite how to articulate it. Like he needs to alpha dog himself.
Right. He never goes and raps with Picard about what this is like.
Yeah. Yeah, we're missing that scene, aren't we?
You know, like, that may be the one thing that they didn't include, because they do ask and answer a lot of the questions about what is it like for a weird copy of yourself to be walking around, which is, like, it's an interesting idea. Like, they frankly deal with the idea of, like, is this the same person, or is he now a distinct person with a different identity? You know, like the idea of self is so foundationally based on the idea that there is one of you, and if there's two of you, like, how do you cope with that?
You know, the one person on the ship that knows exactly what that's like is Data.
Right.
It would have been interesting to see Data's reaction to this. Like, Data always sort of lurking in the background, spying on Riker Beta. Like, in case he presents some lore tendencies.
Just ready to jump out and rip...
and rip some
arms
off.
Riker Beta apart.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the one feeling we don't get is paranoia that an exact copy could present.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Geordi's been copied too, right? Geordi was copied far worse, but he had a copy.
Yeah. Geordi was copied in the racist way.
Yeah.
So they've got him down in Six Bay. Picard meets Riker Beta. Then they have a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And Geordi has kind of worked out the answer to how this happened. And this is maybe, like, the flashiest shot of the episode. This is, like, a big moving establishing shot with And it's like, it's really Geordi's big scene in the episode.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a little like, okay, LeVar. <come on." laughs> But be that as it may, like, he's explaining the science behind how there are two Rikers now.
Apparently, there was a massive energy surge in the distortion field around the planet just at the moment you tried to beam out.
And he is at the center of this Steadicam shot that kind of swings around the room.
Transporter Chief tried to compensate by initiating a second containment beam.
Until he can walk up to the screen, and he shows a little diagram that shows that they were like beaming him out, and like the signal got duplicated.
What happened to the second beam?
The transporter chief shut it down, but somehow it was reflected back to the surface.
If masculinity had a mass, the transporter was just incapable of lifting it.
Yeah, so one Riker materialized back up on battleship Potemkin, and the other materialized back in the station, and they both assumed that they were the one Riker.
Yeah,
they had no reason as they pulled out of orbit to think that there was anybody left down on the surface.
Riker Beta's like, well, at least I got these files. Someone's got to come back for these files.
Right. Well, that's really intense, right? Like, he talks about how he like assumed that they maybe had a funeral. Like, you know, he realized kind of late in the game what had happened, like why they never came back for him. And so then he comforted himself with the idea of them having a funeral, and he's like sitting in his quarters, and Troy comes in and sees him, and he is like, holy shit, my girlfriend from 8 years ago is here on the ship.
Yeah. Very exciting.
He is, it's like Marty McFly meeting back up with Elizabeth Shue type shit.
Oh man, the US cipher sorted.
Yeah, he's sort of at a laptop looking at his own service record when she walks in. You gotta believe that would have been his second Google search, right? Like, you're gonna look up yourself, and then you're gonna look up the old girlfriend.
Yeah. Google search Imzadi. I'm feeling lucky.
Do you think that they ever thought about showing Riker Beta's life in flashback, or maybe in terms of cold open? Like, if the cold open had been 8 years ago and Riker being left behind, like, is the reason you don't do that because Frame of Mind happened two episodes ago and you already saw sort of a fractured Will Riker character? Because that episode's proximity to this one made me think a lot about some of the decisions that were made here in terms of how the story was told.
I mean, I think that's a totally valid and interesting way to tell the story, but this kind of winds up being, I mean, I think that like the, like playing with the linearity of this story maybe detracts from the kind of emotional arc that both Rikers go through.
Right, right.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, they both have to kind of grapple with what it means for the other to be around. Like, Commander Riker is not in love with the person that he was 8 years ago and sees a lot of flaws in himself. And then Lieutenant Riker just feels like he's been kind of in the penalty box for 8 years. He's out of the game, and you know, the world has kind of passed him by.
Do you think you get to keep your seniority if you're Riker Beta?
Oh, you mean like, can he command a lieutenant that got commissioned?
Well, no, I mean, do those 8 years count on your service record? They have to, right?
I'm sure they must. Yeah. I mean, we talk about this sometimes, right? Like, that Starfleet must have some way of getting Kelsey Grammer's captainhood updated for the current timeline, right?
We've got to account for temporal seniority. Yeah, and, like, that tension you're talking about, I thought, was great. Like, there's a tension that a person has for the decisions that they've made in the past. And here, Riker Prime is confronted with them, like, physically. Like, he's, like, his past self is also, like, very Shelby-like. Did you pick up on that? Like, real headstrong and talkbacky. And I wonder if that's why Shelby and Riker never got along in Best of Both Worlds. Like, because it's sort of a narcissism of minor differences at right. play.
Yeah. I think that's pretty apt. I mean, he is the ambitious younger man.
Yeah.
And he's had to stew in that ambition for 8 years while he wondered when somebody would come pick him up.
That regret of, like, the path not taken in your life, too, is, like, being articulated by yourself in front of you. Like, if you were confronted with your past self and they asked you why you didn't make it with that one girl that you liked so much, like, that's got to be an awful feeling. And that really underscores sort of the soft boil that Riker Prime has to live with throughout this episode.
I would say that the, like, main storyline in this episode is the relationship between Beta Riker. We really need to come up with a good go-to for him. But Yellow Shirt Riker, Beta Riker, and Troy. Because he really, like, held a candle for her.
I had a lot of time on my hands when I was down on that station.
And this was perhaps naive, but he kind of has this idea that she might have waited for him, even.
Yeah.
So when they, like, first meet up and it becomes clear that she has not, you know, she has continued to live her life for 8 years, he's disappointed, but he's like, I just want to, like, really, like, put a pin in this for you. I'm still madly imzadi with you.
I am Locute as a ball. You will assist us. I am Locute as a ball. You are ball.
You get the feeling that both from this episode and Frame of Mind, that Riker may have the strongest will and intellect of anyone on the crew. He basically tells Troy that, like, you were the thing that kept me together, basically, in solitary confinement. And between this episode and that, like, Riker has a ton of mental firewalls up that gets him through awful situations. He's got this reputation as being, like, a raconteur and sort of, like, a less serious crew person. But, like, twice this season, he's really shown himself to be far stronger mentally than we ever gave him credit for.
Yeah. Hella strong.
Yeah.
That's the result of years of emotional abuse by Kyle Riker.
Yeah. Double the daddy issues.
Double the fun. They beam down to go get these computer files, which they didn't get in the first window. So they are now in the second window, and they're like, oh man, like, got to get these files. And Lieutenant Riker is like, oh, well, you know, like, we probably need to replace some EPS conduits down under the station. I go down there all the time. It's pretty chill hang. Like, I can show you how to do it. And they're like, well, we don't have time on this trip, so we'll have to figure it out next time. He's like, oh, that's cool. You guys go ahead back on up to the ship. I've got a couple of stashes of porno I wanted to find anyways, and I'll handle the EPS thing, and you guys can just get me in the next window.
Yeah, when you aren't expecting to see anyone, the level of thought you've put into your Jack Shack has got to be intense. You need some time to take that thing down, and I totally understand how interested he is in doing that.
You do not want to leave that as a monument to your time alone on the planet.
Yee. You know what? I'm going to take Data with me. He is entirely non-judgmental.
This is also, like, a great testament to Riker's mental strength, right? Like, he was stuck here for 8 years, and he does not think twice about saying, I'll meet up with you guys on the next pass. Like,
yeah,
I would be terrified to stay down there.
Yeah, like almost like the POW camp survivor going back to the camp.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like there would be some really bad PTSD involved. And even the doctor mentions this earlier. Like, look, we could put this guy back on duty again, but I wouldn't send him back down to the surface. That seems like a bad idea. But to his credit, Riker Beta's like, sure, I want to help.
Just because we've kind of zipped past this, I want to call out the transporter chief in this episode is Mae Jemison. Dr. Mae Jemison, who was the first African-American woman in space.
The great cameos, I think.
Yeah. One cool thing that this show did was, like, getting really, really cool people to come hang.
She is a better actor than a 50-year-old ensign of the last episode. You know? Like,
she really is.
She's great.
Yeah. I guess she's like friends with Nichelle Nichols too.
Yeah, cool. And Nichelle Nichols was on set.
Oh, really?
Pretty great.
Man, can you imagine being friends with Nichelle Nichols or Dr. Mae Jemison?
Do you think they say that to each other all the time? It's so great being friends with you. I know.
It's the coolest.
The two storylines that that concur throughout the episode is the mission to get the recovered files before this window of time closes and they can't get them again for another 8 years, and also the brewing romance between Troy and Riker Beta, who is really like putting the full court press on Troy. He does a love letter scavenger hunt and
I was just thinking when I was watching this, like, my wife would fucking hate this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was thinking my wife would love this.
I would also be like way too nervous. Like, she would be irritated and I would be like, is it working? Is she going to get the clues? Like, did I write them as cluey enough, but also easy enough to get that she'll get the next one?
Yeah. There's some real Riker confidence in the idea of doing this at all, isn't there?
Am I just going to be in this Outback Steakhouse alone by myself all night?
I don't know if I could take on a second Bloomin' Onion, but I think I should try. That's a sad onion.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing sadder than like a one-quarter done Bloomin' Onion. You going to finish that? Do you want us to box it up? No.
Ugh. Then your car smells like onion on the way home.
Yeah, it's just never going to be the same. It's going to be all soggy the next day.
Yeah.
This is a pretty intense date. It starts, like, heated. She's saying the story of how Commander Riker kind of stood her up for this kind of epic Risa fuckfest that they had planned and really, like, poured himself into his career and how that really tore her up.
What I didn't say was how disappointed I was.
She's not happy about it, but he plays it well, and like he
doesn't throw Riker Prime under the bus all the way, which is interesting. Like, I think weaker writing would have been like, I know he looks like me and everything, but he's not me. I'm totally different, and I'm ready to right those wrongs. Like, he's far more subtle in a way that is way more satisfying than that would be.
Yeah, it's much more of a much more of an American Tale type of deal where he's talking about looking up at a star and thinking that she might be looking at that same star. And they get to this point in the conversation where they're kind of saying, like, maybe we were looking up at the same star thinking about each other, because, like, the Riker that I loved, like, kind of stopped being the same person, but you kind of still were that person.
Marina Sirtis is great in this episode.
She fucking kills it.
And it feels like it's been a long time since we've really gotten into the Riker-Troy backstory deeply. And they really go on a deep dive here. And it's so satisfying. Yeah. Like, man, for all the Worf-Alexander stuff we get, like, this is a real juicy storyline that we just don't get enough of in the series.
Well, what happens anytime Dr. Beverly or Counselor Troy is having a romantic fling. They get together for a workout, and they're practicing their Klingon yoga. And Riker Beta wanders into the workout room, and Dr. Beverly does like the great, like, she does like the opposite of a cock block. She's like, "Well, I was just leaving."
She does that thing she did in 10 Forward when Pipes was dating the piano player. She totally pieces out like a great wingman.
Yeah.
Good job by her.
Yeah. Are you hearing all that crazy thunder?
I just heard that one.
Damn.
Wow. The
fucking heavens have opened up over here.
It's really going off.
This is the question, right? Like, they fall into each other's arms, like they do a couple of little chop socky moves, and then they're just rolling around on the floor smooching. And it is the Troy who loved and lost rolling around with the Riker of the past that she like remembers being in love with. It is not the Riker that she's grown into having a friendly personal relationship with and a good professional relationship with.
There's a kind of magic trick here they're doing that. Whoa, I definitely heard that one.
This is a haunted episode of The Greatest Generation.
Yeah.
And after we close the mics here, I'm going to go do some murders.
Is your dog okay?
He's probably hiding under the bed. Yeah. That's his typical move.
There's a magic trick that this episode does that I don't know if it worked like this for you, but like this should have been cheesy. This whole second chance that Troy gets with a man that she used to love that turns out still loves her. Like, why does this work? It does, is what I'm saying. But it seems like a miracle that it does.
Yeah. Well, I think that...
Soap operas all the time, right? The guy comes out of the coma, like that sort of thing, and it's total shit, but it works here.
I think the reason it works is that she winds up being, like, really emotionally honest about the situation. Like, she is... when she's rolling around on the floor with him, very explicitly giving in to an emotional temptation. Mm-hmm. But her later scene with him is basically the opposite. It's like, I love the idea of being with the Riker that I had in my head when we were planning that Risa trip, but I actually have some game tape on this. I don't know if you know this, but there's another one of you, and I actually got to find out what happened when he got back from that mission, and it was blow me off and leave me holding the bag on the expensive Risa plane tickets. So,
yeah. There's such a fascinating scene related to that where Riker Prime sort of warns Troy about Riker Beta in the, you know how I am, right? Like, if we're truly the same person, then this guy's just as capable of hurting you as I did, which is, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's why this episode is so great, is, like, it's one of the few episodes I can think of where they're not afraid to kind of darken one of the characters, make them not an exemplary person, have a real...
Right.
Like, this is a real flaw in Riker's character.
Yep.
I read a Sharon Stone quote recently that this made me think of, which was, women fake orgasms, men fake whole relationships. I was like, man, like, yeah, like, Riker is basically saying, I'm kind of a dog, and if you trust this guy, you're potentially going to fall for the same thing, and... Troy's like, yeah, you're fucking right.
If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
It's such a weird twist on the, you know, the like Bob Seger song lyric mentality of like, I'm just going to hurt you, babe. Like, stay away from me. But it's like, stay away from that guy who is also me. Stay away from us.
Yeah.
Troy, having had the benefit of 8 years of life experience, like, after rolling around with Riker Beta on the yoga mat, she has some time to think on things. And she is, you know, as she let her guard down there in all definitions of that. But I think having had some time to think about it, like, she has not given herself entirely over to the idea at this point. It's going to take more than a single roll in the hay to get Deanna Troi to leave her life and career, right?
Yeah, she makes a really interesting decision here. I mean, because I think that while Riker Prime is totally right, and while she does play the safe hand here, she also, you know, like she doesn't change it up for love, and like sometimes that's the right move. And maybe it was here, you know, maybe the 8 years of isolation are the thing that changes the kind of constitution of Riker's character.
Yeah.
The other thing we never get in this episode is like the two Rikers exploring what masturbating is like when there's two of you.
What would you do if you had $1 million, Troy? Two Rikers at once?
Two Rikers at once on a pile of scarves.
Yeah, there's a lot of twin-style debasement that could happen here that you don't see for obvious reasons. So we become less and less interested in the file management story and more interested in the idea of, like, what is Riker Beta going to do? Like, he needs to start a life here. And so Picard ends up hooking him up with a job on another ship.
Yeah, they, like, I think they, like, narrowly get the files. There's like a kind of an intense action scene where Riker Prime saves Riker Beta from falling down a Kirk-style...
a planet butthole?
Yeah, it's like the same, it's the same catwalk that that they had in Star Trek Generations, right?
Yeah, it's the same, it's, like, and Backdraft and about a million other movies. You can't walk across those catwalks without them falling over.
Yeah, you got to be careful with those fuckers. But yeah, the captain arranges for Yellow Shirt Riker to go get a commission on a different ship, and it's a great opportunity. And he's like, yeah, Troy, like, there's nothing stopping you from coming with me. Maybe we could even get married.
And this is like straight out of the Riker Prime playbook. She's like, I remember this line.
You said those exact words to me before you went to serve on the Potemkin.
She's like, I worked really hard to get here. I have a life here. No can do, bub. She, in the Kelly Taylor parlance, chooses me.
I've made my choice, and I choose me.
They're about to smooch, and Riker Prime wanders in, and he's like, oh, shit, fuck. sorry, bruh. Were you about to get in on that? And he's like, no, we were just talking. And Riker Prime is like, well, all of my shit is essentially your shit, but maybe the most yours of all is this trombone, so I decided to give it to you.
There's a certain amount of disgusting that comes with playing a rented musical instrument that I know fairly well from junior high and high school.
Never had one lesson.
But there's probably no such feeling when you're giving that instrument to yourself, right? Like the mouthpiece just smells like it's yours. Smells like your brand.
Wafting. Oh, everyone likes their own brand, don't they?
So maybe this is sort of the masturbation scene I was missing.
I wonder if Riker Beta can play that super difficult song.
Oh,
like, he probably didn't have a trombone down at the station, did he? Like, what if he had 8 years of practicing? What if the climax of the episode is trombone contest?
Yeah.
That would be cheesy as hell.
It would be cheesy as hell. Trombone contest to find out who's going to be the commander.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a real 80s movie race down the bottom of the ski slalom. Type finale.
Yeah, he's going to decide whether the developer is going to kick all the townies out or not. There is some trivia about this episode, which is that it was going to, in that like climactic scene with the catwalk, they were going to kill Commander Riker and have Lieutenant Riker join the staff of the ship as a junior officer. Like, Data would have become first officer kind of a thing. Isn't that fun to think about?
Just to put you on the spot, like, are you pro that move or not?
Man, it...
because reflexively, I am pro that move.
I'm pro that move, yeah. from just like a being a totally interesting twist to the story. Like, I'm not sure if a TV series of this era really had what it takes to grapple with something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's such an operatic kind of idea, like somebody's rank changing so fundamentally and like we have to think of them as a different person. I feel like, you know, in our little second golden age here, we could maybe make that work, but perhaps not 30 years ago.
If they had decided to do it, and the consequence was as ham-handed and awful as the end of Star Trek Nemesis with Data and his replacement robot. Like, mm-hmm. I'm really glad they didn't go that route. But
yeah.
The idea of a Lieutenant Riker serving
spoiler
aboard
alert,
the...
by the way. Jeez.
No one should see that movie, by the way. I would encourage
There's
you not to.
There's a good chance that we have to watch it and go on tour about it.
If my spoiler saves one life out there from wasting those 2 hours, it will have been worth it. The idea of like that low-level sadness of any scene that Lieutenant Riker is in, who has to interact with, you know, who is ostensibly his best friend, Worf, for example. Like,
right.
like, this is the guy, this is my best friend, but we do not have the foundation of a friendship that we used to have at all. Like, there would be such a great tension in every scene that he's in that I would have liked to have seen what that kind of show would have been like for the last season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they have a funeral for Riker Prime? They'd have to, right? And then does Riker Beta have to speak at it?
Of all the souls I've encountered in my travels, his was the most human.
Of all the souls I've encountered in my travels, his was the most erotic. Real head fuck, man.
Yeah.
You need an extra large torpedo to shoot out of the tube when you stuff it full of Riker.
Mm-hmm. There's a big lump in the middle where his boner is.
The guys are like sitting on the torpedo hood to close it. We need two or three more guys. It appears the rigor has taken hold.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
Yes. I really did. It might be mountain worthy, like in a fourth position mountain worthy. Really loved it.
I might put it on mine as well.
It was not only great as an episode, but it was great in the head too. Like, because my cannon was always running through this episode, and it was no less satisfying to like be punching up or punching down as I watched it. Just really fun. Like,
yeah,
very
totally.
Well developed.
Every time you come up with like an idea of what would be a fun scene to have, they throw it in there for you. Like, oh man, like what about this guy playing poker with Riker Prime?
Yeah,
here you go. We did that for you. You know, like they don't leave a lot of stones unflipped.
Yeah, and like if you were to pitch me the idea of, you know, we need one of these every season. Give me a Riker Troy romance story. This is the best realization of what that story could be.
Mm-hmm.
Really great.
Solid as Sears.
Ben, do we have any priority one messages in the box?
Oh, I don't imagine we do, but I suppose we should check.
Do we have one priority one message and then an exact copy of that priority one message?
We'll find out.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. And the first one is from your dad, Mark Krusik. And it's for Isabella. Isabella, I am very proud of you. You're a great daughter. And I'm excited about you starting the next phase of your life at Chatham College. Please be sure to study Data's cat poetry carefully. I love you, Dad.
That's sweet.
That is very sweet. It is amazing to think that there are multiple generations of families listening to our show.
That's great. A little advice to Isabella, though. Like, sure. I don't know if this is the sort of college that has a dorm where you'd be living with roommates and stuff. I would keep our pod headphones only, just for social reasons.
Yeah, if you get a poster from our upcoming tour, maybe hang it in your home, your bedroom at home, you know?
Like inside the closet door, maybe.
Your dad sounds like probably a pretty cool parent in terms of like won't throw out your greatest gen stuff when you move off to college, you know? There's a lot of parents out there who throw away their children's beloved baseball cards the second they're out the door. sounds like you were raised in a safe environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we have any other priority one messages, Adam?
Sure do, Ben. This message is from Lily. It is for Tim. It goes like this. Happy 4th anniversary. I know we said no presents, but it doesn't really count if it's early and on a Star Trek podcast, right? You're my favorite, and I can't wait to spend the rest of our lives stacking isolinear chips in Shimoda Corner. Punch Squad, activate!
premature giftulation.
Yeah. You know, so much of a marriage is just the daily task of stacking chips, making sure they don't fall over.
Sure.
I like what Lily and Tim have going here.
Yeah. I like that Lily is like changing the game up. You know, no gift in terms of like, I'm not going to give you some object that's worthless, but I do want to make a gesture.
And yeah. I especially like the idea of making a rule and then breaking that rule, but breaking the rule in the other person's favor. That's fun.
Totally. Yeah.
Well, if you have a message of a personal nature or a commercial nature, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Personals are 100. Commercials are 200. They're a great way to keep up with the ongoing production of our show.
Darmok Angelad at Tanagra. Darmok Angelad at Tanagra.
Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself an exact copy of an already existing Drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give mine to Jordy for the scene in engineering when Troy's on her little scavenger hunt. She comes down and finds a flower and a note on the warp core.
Can I help you, counselor?
No, thank you.
Man, like, come on, you're chief engineer. You should know when somebody's tampering with the warp core, Jordy.
In a fairly serious episode throughout, this was the outlier scene, and this was my Shimoda too, Ben. Like, Jordy is ostensibly supposed to be the guy that sees everything.
Yeah.
What is a cloned Riker doing with access to engineering up to the point where he could touch the warp core?
And also, like, when she walks away, Jordy is like, side-eyeing the warp core. Almost as if to say, how could you?
Yeah.
Does Jordy have some heretofore unannounced romantic relationship with the warp core?
It's like the next day for Thomas Riker. Like, he shouldn't be given full range of the ship, right?
Yeah.
They don't know if he's a plant or what.
Yeah, he could still be a bad.
Another from the case files of Security Chief Worf. Not great security.
Come on, Worf.
Do we have what do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 6, episode 25, Timescape. The entrepreneur is frozen in time on the brink of total annihilation, and Picard must figure out how to rescue it without destroying it. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
What is the it in that statement? The ship?
The ship.
Huh. Sounds a lot like that Timescape mission where they found Malibu Picard.
Yeah, it's like there's a bullet flying at the head of the ship and somebody has pressed pause and Picard can move around in the scene.
Mm. Feels like they've given Patrick Stewart a nice long break. Like, I almost forgot he was a character on this show. I'm happy to know that we're getting maybe a Picard-centric episode again.
Yeah, he hasn't done much since The Chase, has he?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember really liking this episode. So I'm excited to watch it.
It'll be the first time in a while for me. So it'll feel like new.
Oh, I love that new Star Trek smell. Adam, one thing that doesn't smell is our legion of viewers who go online and chat with us about the show using the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter, where Adam is at CutForTime and I'm at Benjamin R, AHR. We've also got greatestgen.wikia.com. We've got greatestgen.reddit.com. We've got the Greatest Gen Facebook group. There's also a page you can like on Facebook. A lot of fun places to chat and get down on some Greatest Gen goodness.
If you're interested in supporting the show, there's just a number of ways to do that. Maybe one that we haven't talked about in a while is like the ongoing need for ratings and reviews. That is probably the number one way that people find out that this show exists. So if you listen to the show and enjoy it, be sure to rate and review it.
Go on Apple Podcasts, leave a nice rating. It is a nice thing to do. Doesn't take you very long.
Yeah. Ben, we've got extra episodes for people who donate to finance the support of our show. Those episodes, I think, are some of our best work. So I hope if you haven't thought of supporting the show yet, that might be a good carrot to entice you into doing so.
Yeah, there's one of our live shows, and there is our legendary Crimson Tide episode with an entirely custom-made theme song by Adam Ragusea.
The Goose!
Speaking of whom, we should thank The Goose for making a lot of the music for this show, and also Dark Materia, who made our theme song.
Absolutely.
And very graciously let us use it. With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation that's ripping farts and then drying smiley faces in the puffs of those farts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.